This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Starting next month, the leading edge of the baby boom generation hits 60. This enormous demographic bulge is over 78 million strong, and come 2006, they'll turn 60 at the rate of over 7,900 per day. That's 330 per hour. In other words, the generation that never planned to grow up is planning for retirement. And not very well, according to the experts. Across the country, savings rates have been falling for the past decade. This past summer, they reached negative levels, the lowest since the Depression. Americans also live longer, 10 to 20 years past retirement on average, so those paltry savings have to stretch even further. This hour, our main focus is on personal savings, our nest eggs. Later in the program, whatever became of the Christmas bonus? Send us an email on the best Christmas bonus you ever got, TOTN at NPR.org. But first, nest eggs. In a few minutes, actor-economist Ben Stein will join us to take your questions about the importance of savings overall and how to know what's enough, and also some advice on how to build a retirement fund. If you'd like to join us, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. But we begin with Sophie Beckman. She's a financial planner for AG Edwards. The financial services company has compiled its first Nest Egg Index, which ranks the nation's best saving cities and states, and she joins us now from the studios of KWMU, our member station in St. Louis. Nice to have you on the program.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Before we break this down by region, which is what your survey did, step back for a minute and just give us an overall picture. How well are we doing nationally in terms of personal savings?
Well, as you indicated, the personal savings rate is at its lowest level since the Great Depression. So what we wanted to do is take a look at maybe some areas where people are successful with regard to savings and where they're facing some difficulties.
Now, you set up this index and came up with 100 as the average, but what factors are you considering here?
We took 12 statistical factors, and we looked at them with regard to the 50 states and also 318 metropolitan savings areas, or statistical areas, I should say. And we ranked the top 200 of those metropolitan areas in all of the 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
The different factors that we looked at involved home ownership, participation in employer-sponsored savings plans, and also other savings plans, and personal debt levels.
We have a question on methodology, and we'll welcome those as well. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. This is Malcolm. Malcolm calling from Memphis.
Hello, Neil.
Yes.
On the air?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, yes, my question is, you talked about the negative savings rate, and yet in the last, say, 20 years, we've heard about this explosion in the average investor in mutual funds and 401k plans and all that. So how are we defining savings? Is it the old savings account in the bank, or is it money put in any type of investment or retirement account?
Sophie Beckman.
Well, the U.S. Commerce Department statistic on it, which is a negative 0.7% in October, does not include retirement savings. It does just include personal savings outside of retirement plans such as 401ks. But what we're finding is that even with regard to 401ks, there are a lot of employers out there who offer those types of plans, yet almost a third of people who have them available to them are not taking advantage of them and participating.
But your nest egg survey, people in it could have a lot of money in a retirement plan, and your survey wouldn't take that into account?
It doesn't take into account the dollar amount. It takes into account with regard to retirement plans. It takes into account whether they are participating or not, whether they have assets such as outside of savings vehicles outside of their retirement accounts and investment vehicles outside of their retirement accounts. As far as magnitude goes, their net worth will indicate, you know, the overall amount of savings that they have available net of debt, obviously. But we didn't take into account dollar amounts when we were looking particularly at retirement plans.
So, if you have money in the stock market, it would get figured into your net worth, and so that it does figure into the calculation.
Yes.
Okay. That's what we want to know. Malcolm, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Good question. And now, looking at this on the regional level, it looks as if the Northeast is the part of the country that saves the most.
Yeah, according to what we found, when you look at the state-by-state rankings, the Northeast, that is the New England area as well as the Mid-Atlantic states, did the best in the rankings. And then the Southeast regions ended up at the bottom part of the 50 states.
Yeah, Mississippi and Louisiana, as if they didn't have trouble enough already, right down there at the bottom of the rankings.
Right.
Yeah. Any understanding of why one part of the country would do better than another?
Well, we took into consideration 12 factors, which also included cost of living, home ownership, housing values. And so some of those external factors, such as the overall housing market and cost of living and employment rates, would vary from region to region. However, we found that most of the time, the reason that the particular areas did well was because of personal choices that they made with regard to their savings, overall savings plan, mm-hmm. such as participating in a retirement plan and starting out early as soon as they start employment, starting in that plan, and then also keeping personal debt low.
Mm-hmm. Yet another factor I know you looked at was the rate of taxation. In other words, you would think that the lowest taxed states might turn into a higher rate of savings. That doesn't turn out to be true.
Right. We the top three states, Connecticut and Minnesota, are two of the highest taxed per capita areas or states in the country, and yet they ranked second and third in the 50 state ranking.
And again, that would seem to be counterintuitive.
Right. So I think it's more a case of personal choices in a lot of instances rather than economic factors.
Hmm. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Lee. Lee calling us from Medicine Bow in Wyoming.
Yes. Well, they say we're not saving enough, but Alan Greenspan's lowered the interest rate so much that people that have saved money can't survive on what they saved anymore, on the interest. It's too low.
And I think the key here with that is that interest-bearing investments aren't necessarily the only answer to savings vehicles.
Well,
you need to be diversified.
People don't know about the stock market and stuff and don't want to lose their money.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and what we would recommend to a client who's asking us this question is that they go ahead and diversify and have
not a question, it's a statement.
In other words, you don't want to put your money in the stock market because you could lose your money.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, and historical rates of return have proved that if you're in the stock market for the long haul,
based on history. A lot of people that were in the stock market for the long haul during the last crash lost their money.
But a lot of that has been recovered if you stayed
through today. Lost it, probably.
Well, a lot of them did manage to stay, and some of those stocks have recovered since then, or they may have moved their money into other stocks. But your point, Lee, is well taken. There are some people, Sophie Beckman, who don't want to put their money into situations where it's at risk, and I guess those people
situations they don't understand.
Exactly, and these things are getting more complicated all the time.
That's right. There are so many different types of investments out there, and that's where the help of a financial advisor can be beneficial. You can talk to somebody and find out what exactly you're able to stomach as far as risk goes and find appropriate investments for you. Mm-hmm. The key is to be diversified so that when one type of investment is doing poorly, you may be able to take advantage of market increases with regard to another type of investment. If you have your money spread over several types of investments, then you're able to take advantage of the upswings and downswings of the market.
Hmm. Well, Lee, that may not address your particular situation, but I thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Ann. Ann calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to ask with regard to the factors looked at to possibly explain the difference in rates of savings around the different regions in the country, whether cultural issues were looked at.
Sophie?
No, we did not look at any demographics whatsoever. It was strictly based on the general population and yes or no type questions to several of the criteria or factors, and then values with regard to home ownership and net worth. We did not single out any particular type of person at all.
And when you say values, you're talking about monetary values as opposed to somebody's beliefs.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Right, dollar amounts.
Oh, I was just talking about more the social mores with regard to spending habits, where I grew up in the Northeast. I now live in the Southeastern United States. And to me, the Northeastern is just a little bit of a more frugal culture. Given a choice A or B, a Northeasterner, as a general group, there's exceptions in either situation always, might pick the more frugal one, that the most frugal one that meets their needs. And I think in other parts of the country, there's a little bit more of a go-for-it lifestyle type of spending.
Yes, and I do think that the Nest Egg Index did reflect that to an extent. It sort of perpetuated some of the stereotypes that you may have in mind when you think of, when you're thinking along those lines that you indicated.
Other factors, I mean, just glancing at the list, and again, I cover politics a lot, but a whole lot of blue states up there in the higher savings categories, a whole lot of red states in the less saving category.
Again, we didn't look at demographics, so we didn't break it out by political lines or anything like that. It's all strictly by region.
And that's left, I guess, to you and me to interpret. Thanks very much for the phone call.
You're welcome.
And thanks very much for joining us today, Sophie Beckman. We appreciate you sharing the first A.G. Edwards Nest Egg Survey with us.
Thank you.
And Sophie Beckman, who's a financial planner for A.G. Edwards, joined us from the studios of our member station, KWMU, in St. Louis, Missouri. We're going to talk more about Nest Egg's money that's supposed to be put away now to cushion retirement for the future. When we come back from the break, Ben Stein will be joining us. He's a spokesperson for the National Retirement Planning Coalition. You may know him better as the host of Ben Stein's Money. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Of course, you may remember something saying about Bueller, something like that. Anyway, we'll be back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2006 will be a pivotal year for many baby boomers. Some of those reaching the 60-year-old milestone that year include President George W. Bush and former President Bill Clinton, as well as the singers Cher and Dolly Parton. They may have financial cushions to soften their retirement, but what about you? How financially prepared are you to face your golden years? If you have questions about building up a retirement fund or if you're on the road to having one, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Ben Stein is spokesperson for the National Retirement Planning Coalition and co-author of Yes, You Can Still Retire Comfortably. He's also, of course, an actor and humorist, the host of Winning Ben Stein's Money, and a trained Yale economist. He joins us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It was a miracle that I found these studios. Let me just say, you have the most obscurely well-hidden studios in the world.
Well, careful planning for yes. Emergencies that way. Anyway, obviously some people are saving. Who's not?
Well, it tends to be low-income people, of course, and it tends to be young people, and it tends to be people who don't have much discipline. I was fascinated by your list of the states that were high-saving states and the list of low-saving states.
Mm-hmm.
Those high-saving states, just to put it as simply as possible, as one of your callers suggested, are states of Yankee frugality and good common sense. And so are a lot of the northwestern states. The southern states tend to be more flash, cash, and trash. I mean, I love the South, and my wife's a southerner, and I am sort of too. But there's just a different attitude about saving and spending. And boy, are the people who've got that bad attitude going to be sorry.
Indeed, there are an awful lot of people for whom I guess the whole idea of a retirement plan is something like a wide Egyptian river. They're in denial.
They're in denial, and they're going to suffer for it terribly. There is nobody out there to bail them out. Private pension plans are dying before our eyes. They're going to be in 10 years, they'll be as dead as the dodo bird. Even municipal and government pension plans, I think, are in severe jeopardy. There was a big piece about this in the New York Times recently, and I think there's going to be problems for municipal employees providing for their retirement. It's up to us. We've got to do it. We've got to start immediately. We've got to start today putting money aside for retirement. I was fascinated by your call from the gentleman from Wyoming. He's totally right. If you'd started putting money in the stock market in 99 and then sold in late 2001, you had been wiped out, in tech especially. But if you'd started in 1979 and kept on until 2005, you'd be terribly rich. So over long periods of time, the stock market is a wonderful place to be.
800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let us begin with Gayland. Gayland calling us from Kalamazoo in Michigan.
Oh, I was just in Kalamazoo.
Hello, Gayland. You're there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I was just calling to – I was wondering what younger people who are just entering the workforce can do to save for retirement where, say, Social Security may not be around in when we start retiring.
Well, it'll be around, but it probably will not be around in as lavish a form as we baby boomers are going to get it. But I would say have a certain amount deducted from your salary or your wages every month. Have it put into a diversified portfolio of stocks like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the so-called Diamonds ETF, the S&P Spiders ETF, the VBR, which is the Small Cap Value ETF, the EAFE, which is the European, Australasian, and Far Eastern Index. And if you keep adding to it month by month, if you start out when you're in your 20s, if you start out with just a couple of hundred a month, by the time you're in your 50s, you will have a whale of a lot of money. And as little tiny bits when you're in your 20s mean a lot. If you don't start till you're in your 50s, you've got to brutally sacrifice and cut back to get there. But it's worth doing. Nothing's worse than being old and poor.
And Galen, in looking at this, some research for this program, if you started, if you wanted to save $400,000 for your retirement, you start at the age of 25, that's something like $99 a month. If you start when you're like 45, I think, you got to be putting in, I think $600 a month or $700 a month. If you start in your 50s, it's $2,100 a month.
Well, we have some calculations. Phil DeMuth, who's my incredibly smart co-author, did all the hard work in our book, has these incredibly great calculations. If you have no savings earmarked for retirement, and you'll get there if you save 8% of your salary a year at age 25. At age 55, you have to save 66% of your salary to get there.
Wow.
So it's a heck of a difference. If you're blessed enough and happy enough to be young, start saving now, and you will be a very, very, very satisfied camper.
Galen,
think financial advisors are absolutely necessary, or
I think they're very, very valuable, but I would shop around. I would get references from friends. They vary widely in quality. Get references and then go meet them. If they talk jive that you don't understand and they seem to be selling something, it's a high profit item for them, not necessarily for you, don't go with them. I think, generally speaking, you'll do fine with the big brokerage firms.
Galen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Thanks.
And just because you're supposed to start young, Ben Stein, doesn't mean that if you've the last 30 years or so have gone by in a blur, that you shouldn't start even if you're 50, 55.
You must start. You must start. It's not just a question of you can start. You must start. I want you to picture being 75 years old, being old and weak, and because you will be weaker at age 75 than you are at age 35. There's no doubt about it. And also being broke and having to live on a pittance from Social Security, having to cut your pills in half, not being able to visit your children or grandchildren, you've got to start saving. You've got to do it. Otherwise, you're going to feel suicidal. I have three friends who've committed suicide over debt. I have others who've had nervous breakdowns over debt, others who've had become drug addicts over debt. It's an incredibly serious thing. You've got to start saving.
Let's get another caller in. This is Chuck. Chuck calling from Nevada City in California.
Hey. How are you?
I'm well.
Good. Hey, this issue about being able to go find a financial planner, I have found to be extremely challenging in terms of getting older people to do it. But what I have found to be very successful is in the context of neighborhoods getting seniors, for example, to get together and meet with each other. There's a new book out called Senior Co-Housing, and it's all about seniors getting together and addressing these issues together in a way that they feel comfortable, they don't feel threatened by going to a financial planner.
And but if it's a decent financial planner, sir, you should not feel threatened. I mean, he should make you feel comfortable.
Well, there's just the facts are that too many people don't go. The vast majority of people don't go. So what I've found is a safe place in the context of neighborhoods where people will sit around and talk about over tea how they're going to take care of themselves as individuals, you know, late in life. And this new book, I'm telling you, I just read this new book called Senior Co-Housing. It's all about people getting together, older people getting together.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and especially if there's strength in numbers, if they have questions that they might feel embarrassed asking by themselves, if they can stand as a group, like students in front of a teacher and ask a question, and it empowers them. I think that's a great idea. But let's do it. I mean, seniors are long-term investors. This is something a lot of people don't know. If you're 65, you're almost certain to live to be 85, and therefore you've got 20 years of investing ahead of you. The price level will almost certainly double in that period of time. You have got to have investments that will keep up with the price level. You're not going to want to eat half as much. You're not going to want to have half as big a house. You're not going to want to have half as much medicine. You've got to make plans for long-term investing, even if you're 65.
No, you're dead right, and the real point is, and I don't know how to describe it exactly, but when you get one financial planner and 30 individuals, the individuals feel like with others they can make decisions, they can sort of like ferret it out. They don't feel like they're alone making, questionable decisions on that.
I think you've made a smart point.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Chuck.
You guys.
And by the way, Chuck, you putting away money for your retirement?
Good question. Just started. I just turned 50 2 months ago, and unfortunately, I've just started giving it serious consideration. But I haven't been able to do it unless I was sitting down with my. I didn't start doing it until I sat down with my neighbors and started saying, "Hey, what are we doing?" And everybody said, "Well, nothing." And then we go, "Well, you know, here's some easy things that we can do." So this book really opened up my eyes.
A very easy thing for you to do is buy a variable annuity or a low cost one. Make sure you don't pay too much for it. Or go to Fidelity or to TIA, CREF, buy a low-cost variable annuity, start socking away money in it every month. You will be so happy by the time you're 75 that you'll have done that. You will be coming and searching me out in Palm Springs and thanking me.
Okay, Chuck.
Thank you. Yeah, but you see, issue is that so much of that stuff seems like jargon to so many people, annuities, et cetera. So you need the support of your neighbors to help you figure it out.
I agree.
Chuck, good luck.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Mark, and Mark's calling us from Wenatchee in Washington.
Hi.
Wenatchee. It's called Wenatchee.
All right, thanks.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm 28 years old. I've got a little bit of debt, and I just want to know if I should concentrate on paying my debt off or if I should start saving.
It depends on the level of interest of the debt. If it's super high interest rate debt, like 23% credit card debt, pay it off right away. You're not going to find an investment that yields more than 23% except paying off that debt. If it's low interest rate debt, like 5%, 4% debt, 6% debt, like on a mortgage, don't worry about it. Just pay it off on a regularly scheduled program. But let yourself you should both be paying off the debt and adding to your savings. But if you have 23% debt, pay it off immediately.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Just in relation to that, Ben Stein, I was curious to ask you about a recent Supreme Court decision which said that people who have not paid off their student loans, well, by the time they start collecting Social Security, the Social Security Department can start withdrawing money to pay off those loans.
Well, I mean, they borrowed the money. They owe the money to the taxpayers, and you have to figure out don't the taxpayers get a break here? The taxpayers loaned this guy the money, and he was extremely contemptuous about repaying it. Why shouldn't the taxpayers be able to repay it? Taxpayers have rights, too.
Well, some people say Social Security is to keep old people from being in crisis, and they get little enough to begin with.
They do get little enough to begin with, but basically this guy was, if I understood the case right, and
right.
I may not have, was basically defrauding the system, and now the system is trying to collect from him. I may not be understanding it correctly, but it seems to me he had avoided paying his legitimate bills for a very long time, and now the government had caught up with him. And, you know, the government is the taxpayers, and we taxpayers deserve a break, too.
We're talking with Ben Stein, a spokesperson for the National Retirement Planning Coalition. What have you done about your nest egg? If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Rich. Rich calling us from Farmington, Michigan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My question was regarding health care and the rising costs, and how can we accurately plan for those costs in retirement? I'm involved in a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan, and looking at what I'm going to receive from my defined benefit plan, if I retire early, let's say 57, the what I'm going to pay out for health care is going to be taking all of my proceeds from my retirement.
And a lot of people are going to be in that book.
Lot of people are going to be in that boat. The retirement community in this country, consisting of many tens of millions of country, are being eaten alive by health care costs, even with Medicare, even with the drug benefit. There is just a bottomless pit, seemingly, of medical costs. This just tells you have to save even more. Unfortunately, there is no such thing as saving quite enough for unforeseen medical costs. Obviously, if you're in the hospital for a chronic condition like congestive heart failure or, God forbid, cancer, Medicare will pick up the great bulk of that cost. But there are going to be other costs that are enormous. I'm afraid there is no option. Obviously, Part B will help, but there is no option except to just save even more than you thought you needed. There's no such thing as erring on the side of caution.
And let's get another caller. Jeff. Jeff with us from St. Croix in the Virgin Islands.
Ooh.
Yes, hi. Hey, how you doing?
It's cold here, Jeff. You're doing better than we are.
It is 81, balmy blue skies, light puffy clouds. And
that's right. That's right. Make us feel bad.
It is the day of the year.
We all hate you, Jeff, but go ahead.
Hey, just called because we have a little bit of tack, a little bit different tack on the savings thing. You know, I have trouble putting money in a savings account because it pays so little.
Mm-hmm.
And never really trusted somebody to give my money to, just not knowing really what they're going to do with it or what the future is. And I've seen a lot of my friends bomb out in the dot-com thing. What we have done down here is we moved to the Virgin Islands a little over 20 years ago, and we have spent the last 15 years building a luxury house. And we're about a year from having it done. We're going to put it on the market between $600,000 and $700,000, and that's our savings. We don't have a cent in the bank.
Well, I think if you've done well, if you're skilled contractors, and if the market is in your favor, you'll do fine with that. But over long periods of time, an index of common stocks like the S&P index or the Dow Jones Industrial Index or even a bigger index like the Fidelity Total Stock Market Index will greatly outperform residential real estate or commercial real estate. You may have some special skills that defeat that comparison, but generally over long periods of time, stocks beat real estate hands down.
Okay, well, I certainly respect your opinion because that's what you do. And I am not a particularly qualified person, but we just happen to be – we picked a spot right for the picking.
Well, if you have a special situation
– very, very real, very, very cheap.
Mm-hmm. If you have a special situation where you're especially gifted at picking property, especially gifted at building on it, you will beat the indexes. There's no doubt about that.
Well, my wife will be a retired teacher for the government here, so we do have a health insurance policy that follows us.
Well, you must have a pension plan, too.
She will have, yes, from hers, yes. I've been self-employed, so I'm not. But like I said, we don't owe a penny on the house, and it'll be going on the market for $6,000 or $7,000.
Well, great. But do you know how much you'll...
That's our little bit different than saving money in a bank.
Okay, but if you get $700,000 for that house, and it's all profit, you're going to have to pay a capital gains tax on that.
Only if they catch me.
Only if they catch you. Okay, well, if you... Well, assuming they catch you, and then you're going to put it at interest. Say you have $600,000 after you pay the tax. Assuming you really, 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 they really don't catch you, you're only going to earn about $30,000 a year on that. Now, that's a lot better than zero, but it's not going to make you a rich retiree. You're not going to be living at Millionaire Acres.
$45,000 or $50,000 a year retirement too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Well, God bless.
We have no heating bills.
All right. Air conditioning then, Jeff.
Right, but Neil. A huge fan of you guys.
Oh, well, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jeff calling us from the St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. Ben Stein, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate
it's been
your
a
time.
Great pleasure, Neil. Thank you so much. I'm an enormous fan as well.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Ben
thank
Stein, spokesperson for the National Retirement Planning Coalition and co-author of Yes, You Can Still Retire Comfortably. He joined us from the well-hidden studios at Culver City, NPR West. When we come back from a short break, the Christmas bonus. How many people still get one? What's the best one you ever got? Send us an email, TOTN at NPR.org, and put Christmas bonus in the subject line. If you'd like to join the conversation by phone, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.